Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Many have given up on the natural, traditional family. They say it's time to move on. The problem is, they're not taking into account the children in those families. And there's no doubt about it, the numbers don't lie. There is a difference in outcomes, if only academic outcomes, but not only academic outcomes, for the intact family and the unstable family. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about student academic success and family structure. Dr. Brad Wilcox joins us. He's professor of sociology and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia. He's senior fellow at the Institute for Family Studies and co-author of a new study titled Strong Families, Better Student Performance. The more things change, the more they remain the same. Dr. Wilcox, welcome back.
It's great to be here, Todd.
How do we define a stable family or family stability?
Well, you can do it in a range of different ways, but in this particular study, we're looking at families where it's the intact married biological parents. So it's the kids' bio parents who are married to one another.
Many would say that the children from unstable families do poorly because of the stigma attached to family instability. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, it's certainly a common perspective. In fact, I was just at an event, you know, last week in Maine, and one of my colleagues there was talking about this issue, and she was arguing the only kind of reason that kids from non-intact families are more likely to struggle is because we have traditionally stigmatized kids in divorced or single-parent homes. But if that perspective was correct, we would expect that sort of the impact of being raised in a non-intact family would be declining since the 70s, when we saw obviously an explosion in divorce and single parenthood. But what this new research that we're reporting does is it looks at trends for kids in the 1990s, actually, and kids in 2019. And we see no decline in the link between, you know, stable families and kids doing better in school. In fact, the link actually has gotten stronger. So again, the point we're sort of underlining in this new research is that kids who are being raised by their own married biological parents are more likely to be flourishing in school today. And that relationship between family structure and student performance has gotten stronger, not weaker, even though I think we're more tolerant and accepting of family diversity today than would have been, say, in the 1990s in this earlier round of data collection.
How common are single-parent and step-parent families in the U.S.?
Well, they're pretty common. About half of kids in the U.S. will spend some time in a non-intact family, and that's primarily the most common pattern would be kids at any one point in time in a single-parent family, about 1 in 4, 1 in 5, depending upon, you know, the time frame we're talking about here. But that's sort of the most common sort of family model besides the intact biological family. And then the second most common after that is sort of the married step family, with typically a biological mother and a stepdad in the picture there.
Do government programs that are designed to help unstable families appear to help with outcomes?
Well, what we're putting out in this particular research is that even though we have seen an increase in sort of public spending on family-related expenses, you know, we're spending more money, for instance, on Medicaid, and we're spending more money on food stamps. We're spending more money in their income tax credit, you know, today than we did, say, you know, 40 years ago. We don't see a kind of decline in the gap between non-intact families, which are more likely to be poor and using those services, and intact families, which are more likely to be relatively prosperous and not using those services. So we're not saying that we can't claim that those programs have no benefit, but we're just saying they're not helping, really, it seems like, to bridge the divide between kids from intact families and non-intact families.
How do students from stable and unstable families then generally compare?
So what we see in this research is that when it comes to sort of looking at outcomes like having a parent contacted for misbehavior or having a child suspended or expelled from school, these are pretty obviously important outcomes, or repeating a grade in school, that today kids in non-Italian families are about twice as likely to be held back in school, and parents about twice as likely to be contacted with respect to misbehavior on the part of their kids when those kids are not being raised by their own married mother and father. And then when it comes to even kind of a more severe outcome, suspensions or expulsions, we see that kids in non-Italian families are about three times as likely to be suspended or expelled compared to kids in these intact married families. So these are pretty large differences. And of course, it's also important to note here that there's a sort of a gender story playing out. And that is that boys, of course, are more likely to be suspended, expelled, more likely to get into trouble at school. So what we're really talking about here in part is that boys in non-intact families are the ones most likely to be landing in the principal's office or facing a suspension or expulsion from school. So that's where the kind of this is most likely to be manifesting itself.
What do we know about couples that marry?
Well, what we know about couples that marry today is they tend to be relatively more educated, relatively more affluent, a little bit older than, say, obviously 1970s or 60s or 50s, and relatively more religious as well.
What effect does that, those characteristics, have on the divorce rate?
So I would say particularly kind of the education, the affluence, and the religion are all kind of reliably related to greater family stability. So for instance, if you share a home together as a married couple, it's kind of a big, obviously shared asset, and that tends to reduce your risk of divorce. You've got a major economic asset you're holding together. And I think for any number of reasons, it tends to make couples kind of stick together and work things out more. And the same thing is true when it comes to religion. So we know that couples who attend regularly are about 30 to 40% less likely to get divorced. And, you know, just having that community of support, having a community where a lot of the other couples are kind of living a more family-focused way of life, hearing sermons about things like forgiveness or fidelity, all these things kind of combined sort of help to stabilize and strengthen religious couples who are married and active in their local congregation.
Has the growth of non-intact families continued to increase?
So it's important to note that, yeah, we have seen kind of an increase over the last 50 years, obviously, in single parenthood and step families, but the pace has really slowed since 2000. And even in the last couple of years, we've seen a slight uptick in the share of kids being raised in stably married parents. And that's in part because for those folks who aren't getting married today and having kids, the divorce rate is coming down. So at least for the kind of married family group, and that's of course only part of the picture today since there are plenty of kids born outside of marriage, but at least for, again, the married family group, we are seeing some signs of greater stability. And I kind of describe this in my own research as kind of a lot of folks living what I would call kind of a family first marriage, where they're trying to kind of prioritize their kids, their financial well-being, their capacity to sort of be part of a broader kinship network with parents and in-laws and all that, recognizing the best thing for them, their kids and their kin, is to try to keep things together when it comes to marriage.
Are there other demographic factors that are significant to these outcomes that you have recently researched?
Sure. So we also would see kind of in the research is that parental education and income are important. Race is important as well. Obviously, it's a big part of the conversation in sort of public schools today, is sort of the role of race when it comes to sort of kids' family outcomes. But it's worth, I think, noting here that when it comes to suspensions, for instance, that, you know, at least in terms of just our coefficients in these models, the largest coefficient that predicts suspension is family instability, followed then by race and then by having a less educated parent. So these are the kinds of things that are all kind of implicated in school suspensions, but it's worth noting that the largest coefficient in our models for that outcome is family structure. By contrast, when you look at something like repeating a grade, family structure is more important than race and the sex of the child, for instance, but parents' education is the strongest coefficient in that model. So what that suggests to me, and this actually dovetails with the broader research, is that for things like SAT scores, grades, that kind of stuff, sort of parents' education is more predictive. But for sort of like the behavioral outcomes, things like getting in trouble at school, getting suspended, getting expelled, what we see is family structure often matters more for that than how educated your parents are.
Why is reported misbehavior in the classroom down?
So one of the things we also talk about in the report is that we've seen a major decline in school suspensions, a major decline in kids being held back a grade, and a major decline in kids being reported for misbehavior. And what we think is actually happening here is not that our students are really much better behaved or really better performing. In fact, there's plenty of evidence to run against those claims, but that schools have, for a variety of reasons, partly because of new pressures from the U.S. Department of Education, have been kind of reluctant to really discipline or hold back kids for fear of running afoul of new federal standards or kind of expectations about equity and social justice in school. So we have seen, again, schools kind of doing less to discipline and hold back kids. And yet, even as they've done that, we still see kind of the relative advantage of hailing from an intact married family being quite strong.
What is the big picture then of this research?
Well, I think the big picture for me is that in a world where I think marriage has become less appealing and less, in some ways, attainable for some folks, it's the case, paradoxically, that marriage, I think, matters more than ever for our kids. You know, in a world where there are a lot of electronic distractions for our kids, in a world where there's more and more economic inequality, you know, for American families, and in a world where, unfortunately, many families are increasingly isolated. They're not engaged in churches. They're not involved in sports activities. They're not doing other kinds of community activities. Having the benefit of a married family in your corner, I think, is actually more valuable today than it was 30 or even 50 years ago. It's sort of my theory here. And this research and two other studies on educational and life outcomes are consistent with this idea that even though marriage is kind of losing ground in our society, it's paradoxically more valuable for our kids today in making their way both in schools and in life more generally.
How do you respond then to the assertion that the days of the natural family, the intact family, are over and we need to move on to reality?
Well, I think it is the case that there are obviously plenty of kids who are, you know, experiencing family instability or some kind of, you know, kind of family diversity. That's the reality. But it's also the case, too, as I mentioned before, that for folks who are getting married and having kids, their marriages are relatively more stable than they were, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, for instance. And the evidence that sort of the married biological family matters for kids just continues to mount. And so if you want to prioritize the welfare of your children, I would say it's important for you to think about getting married, marrying wisely, someone who's a good friend who shares your values, and then in the midst of family life to face the challenges that come with marriage, you know, with the spirit of wisdom and fortitude, recognizing that every marriage has difficult moments, difficult chapters, but the best thing that you can do for your kids is to forge a strong and stable marriage that is an anchor for you and for them.
Dr. Brad Wilcox is director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia. He's senior fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, co-author of a new study titled Strong Families, Better Student Performance. The more things change, the more they stay the same. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Brad, thank you.
Thanks for having me on Issues, etc. Appreciate the opportunity.
Up next, we'll be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the one-year lectionary, talking with Pastor David Peterson about Jesus weeping over Jerusalem in Luke chapter 19. You're connected to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments, where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Bahama Mama, Ocean Pacific, Paradise Island. Retreat from the heat with a shaved ice snow cone from Tropical Snow in Caseyville, Illinois. It's right across the street from Collinsville High School. Tropical Snow is open weekdays from 1 to 9 and weekends from noon to 9. Premium snow, epic flavors, lots of love. Tropical Snow, across the street from Collinsville High School at 2134 South Morrison Avenue in Caseyville.